give this talk at Perimeter. It's very nice to be back to Perimeter and see how it's changed. So I will be talking about some perhaps more field theoretical aspects of the duality between between two dimensions and four dimensions, which is the duality between towers of states correspondingly in two and four dimensions in n equal to two supersymmetric theories. So why do we study two-dimensional models is because they are so much similar to their four-dimensional counterparts. So there are many dualities and many aspects to these dualities, which or correspondences, which have been shown. And in particular, you can show that one of the, I guess, most simple models, the so-called CPN, we'll call it just CPN theory, can exhibit a chiral symmetry breaking, asymptotic freedom, generation of a mass scale and of a mass gap, and etc. And all these things are so much easier to show in two dimensions than in four dimensions. In particular, you have substantially less number of degrees of freedom in these theories. So this is an instance of the inequality 2 is less than 4. So the duality exhibits itself most in the two-dimensional, in this BPS spectrum between the two-dimensional theory and the four-dimensional. So we consider an highly supersymmetric, that means n equal to two super Young Mills or super QCD with the number of colors equal to the number of flavors, and we sit at a particular location at this special point or singular point at the root of the first baryonic Higgs branch. So that's UN. That's UN. So it's more precisely U1 cross SUN. And the other side of this equality or correspondence is n equal to 2, 2, two-dimensional sigma model, CPN theory, which has only 2n minus 2 degrees of freedom if you integrate all n physical particles or all the unphysical degrees of freedom. Yeah. So the gauge part is known to support the so-called non-abelian vortex strings. So those are the configurations, the static configurations, where the gauge fields are winded in such a way that there are non-abelian degrees of freedom which live on the world sheet of the string. So the string itself is not besides the coordinates, it has this so-called non-abelian coordinates which really live in the CPN. So they describe the world sheet. On the two-dimensional counterpart, there are solitons, there are kinks, which interpolate between different vacua the world sheet of the string. So you need to build a correct model which corresponds to the world sheet of such a non-abelian vortex. And if you find the vacua of this and you build fundamental configurations, certainly will be non-local, they will be the kinks which connect one vacuum and the neighboring vacuum. So they're perhaps should be called elementary in comparison with the configuration which connects not the two next to each other vacua. And those are the kinks, called the kinks. And they are shown to precisely correspond to be in one-to-one correspondence with the monopoles of this theory. So this theory is monopole 2 supersymmetric, so it has a bunch of fields in it, including the scalars, and it has, therefore, it has, it allows for monopoles. So surprise there. And those monopoles can be shown to be confined, actually. In a certain regime, they can be they are sitting in the confinement, so they are attached to the strings, and therefore they can really be seen as kings, whereas the strings themselves correspond actually to the this is not too difficult to understand because the world sheet is described by this theory and the vacua of this theory correspond to a particular string state, but if you join the two vacua through a soliton, then you are really dealing with a monopole. So it's a little bit counterintuitive because you would think that the monopole is a sort of small object and a string are stretched. That's what it is. But on the string side, it's the kinks which sort of interpolate from minus to plus infinity, and they are the monopoles, and the vacua themselves are the particular states of the string. So the left hand side is pretty well known, and we can call this the Cyber-Widen theory, and it's known to coupling to contain a bunch of elementary stuff such as quarks, W bosons, and then of course monopoles, and the dions and the bound states of their own. So there is a really an infinite number of states which is there, and they are pretty well studied. But on the strong coupling state, a strong coupling regime, which is you can have various knobs how to control your coupling, either by the vacuum expectation values or as in our case we control it by the masses. If you go to the strong coupling, then not so much is known, and we can resort to the two-dimensional theory. And this correspondence in order to study something about the strong coupling regime. So in particular, for this two-dimensional model, it is known that the strong coupling part can be studied through the mirror theory. So first of all, this is what we mean by CPN with those twisted masses. So CPN is just this. This is a complex vector, and it's got a gauge couplings, and it's n equal to supersymmetric, n equal two comma two supersymmetric terms, including the fermions. So this is pretty much everything. This is the constraint that it lives sort of on a sphere. Or so it has length equal to one, and this is the so-called twisted masses. So they're called twisted because in order to write it down in a supersymmetric way, in order to introduce them in a supersymmetric way, you need to write it in terms of so-called twisted superfields, and that's hence the name. So all the fermions are in there, and these are the auxiliary fields. So the fact that the CPN minus one manifold has a freedom of defining a vector, so all the vectors are equivalent up to a global U1 rotation, allowed to introduce within, I guess, a U1 gauge field, which is purely artificial, purely auxiliary. But still, you can gauge the theory and then show that it reduces precisely to CPN in the strong coupling limit. But then you have one extra knob as well.
Why there is an L index in the mass?
Sorry, what?
Why there is an L index in the mass?
Oh, well, they're n mass parameters, so you have. Yes, you do. The masses do break in this case. You do break the symmetry, but it doesn't matter. It is already in two dimensional case. In four dimensional case, it may be more relevant, but in two dimensions it doesn't matter. So yes, in general you do have actually there is at only n minus one parameters, but yeah, there's a number of parameters which can be tuned, and only the mass differences enter here. What we do next, we choose these masses in to sit on a circle such that they preserve the Zn symmetry, the residual U1R, the residue of the U1R symmetry. But we have to introduce the masses because in general we expect the quarks to have masses, so we do need mass parameters. It's very easy to see that it has n vacua by just looking at this, perhaps, or one of the n's has to be equal to one and all the others zero and a certain basis, and that gives you n vacua, and then that non-zero n will precisely have a corresponding mass, and this auxiliary scalar field sigma will be equal to that mass in the vacuum. But that's only at weak coupling. Of course, at strong coupling, this sort of is completely different. But it turns out that at strong coupling, you have n vacua exactly as well. So as I just said, we pick the so-called Zn twisted masses. That means that there's sitting on a circle of radius m, and this way you only have only one complex parameter, which is easier to work with. And in this case, sort of the all our moduli space has shrunk to just the one complex plane in comparison, for example, with the Seiberg-Witten theory, where you would have the whole space of masses plus the masses will be the parameters really, but the moduli space would correspond to the vacuum expectation values of these scalars. So and I remind again that we are sitting at the root of the first baryonic Higgs branch, so sort of we're always at the singular point, and we're in this sense we're not moving very much on this Seiberg-Witten moduli space. So just to mention that this duality does not reflect certainly all the aspects of the four-dimensional theory, and some information is lost as you pass into two dimensions. So in particular, only the massive degrees of freedom of the four-dimensional part are reflected in the world sheet theory. So the massless or the condensed degrees of freedom are not seen. As written, that theory is known to have an exact superpotential of the Veneziano-Yankelevich type. So it's just sort of sigma log sigma is a general shape, and then it can easily be generalized to have the twisted masses in it, and mu is just renormalization stuff there, but it is important to have it because it sets the massless scale. So it's very easy to find its vacuum of this theory. This superpotential is not 100% exact, so that's why it's in quotes. But it is argued that its vacua or vacuum values do reproduce the correct spectrum. So here we go, when we confined its vacuum values and from the vacuum themselves. So the, in this case where we pick the masses to be on a circle, the vacua also sit in, on a circle in a similar manner, but on a slightly different circle. In the massless case, so where we wouldn't have masses here, we would still have n vacua. So this is perhaps where it is shown that at strong coupling, there are n vacua as well. And this is the equations for the vacua. But in the case where masses are non-zero, we have this kind of relation. So at very small masses, it's pretty much the radius one, and it's at large masses as you go to quasi-classics, the sigmas go or approach the values of the masses. So that does reproduce the result. This result that it in classics. Sigma has to equal the corresponding mass in a vacuum. So that's, I guess, a brief consistency check. So you can write a mirror dual for this theory, which is supposed to describe the whole story at the or near the origin in the mass plane, where you're sitting in the where you're sitting at strong coupling. So the mirror theory depends now on n complex parameters, x's, which are constrained to have the product equal to 1. So this is the superpotential of the mirror theory. And this is the only thing which we know. So as usual for the mirror theory, you don't know the kinetic part. But this for our case, when we're studying the BPS states, this is hopefully more than enough to find the spectrum and check the consistency. So the shape of this, it also has a log, and it's easy to show that the vacuum values of this one precisely match the vacuum values, these ones, if you identify the vacua like this. So indeed, it can be shown that certainly the mirror superpotential can be derived from the Veneziano-Yankelevich superpotential through a certain variable replacement. So Hori and Vafa build the fundamental kinks in the strong coupling region of this mirror theory. They voted for the massless case, and then later it was extended to the mass sieve case at the strong coupling regime, where that is near the origin of the mass plane. So this can be used, and this solitons or these kinks were shown to be to form a fundamental of SUN. That's why we call them fundamental, and that's why there are n of them. So because we have this Zn symmetry unbroken, we in order to establish the spectrum and compare it with the four dimensions, it is really enough for us to consider two particular vacua, and then argue that all the other vacua states interpolating between neighboring vacua will have the same masses because of this Zn symmetry. So we pick two particular vacuum, call them the zeroth and the first, and write the central charge as this. So you would think that really the central charge of a soliton interpolating between two vacua for a BPS state should just be equal to the difference of the superpotential. And then it was shown that there is a mass addition. So really the origin of this mass addition is the consideration of the different branch cuts on the complex plane. So it is really part of one of the logarithms in this. So in perhaps the very strict mathematical form, it should still be written as a difference. And we write it like that as a convenience because it does show you that there are fundamentals under SUN. So there are n fundamental kinks.
Second step of Putnik of n times a plus n times a dual, there's a two-dimensional version.
Yes, yes. So you're saying no. So this mass is not quite the part of the electric charge. So you would think that this would be the magnetic part and this would be the electric part.
No. In two dimensions, electrically charged particles have contribution to the central charge, which is proportional to the mass.
Yeah.
So it's perfectly sensible to have it there additionally to the contribution from the fluid.
Yes. Yes and no. So it does have a part which will be treated as an analog of the electric charge for them.
No, it is the two-dimensional charge.
But
it's a flavor charge. Here is a flavor symmetry. The particles give a flavor charge.
Yes. But part of it will still belong to the superpotential, and perhaps I will show it later. So it's kind of split into two parts.
So potential has multivariedness. So clearly.
Yes. Yes. So this AM jumps out of this multivariedness, I perhaps was referring to the state with, if you choose zero here, for example, then you have M zero here, for example, and then that state will not have any U1 charge, so it only will have this topological charge. That's what, but if you consider other states with different MKs, then they will have the they can be written as MK minus M0, and that would correspond to the U1. So that's sort of what I meant, perhaps.
I mean, you only have an SU symmetry, right? So the N sub line up to a planetary field.
Yes. Yes, the masses are defined only up to a shift. That's correct. But the spectrum isn't. The spectrum should be independent. I mean, the spectrum will only depend on the mass differences. So, does that make sense? So this is a pictorial view of the complex plane, or the moduli space, the space parameter of the mass, and this is very sort of schematic view of it. We have weak coupling at very large masses, then at very small masses we have strong coupling spectrum, and they are separated supposedly by a curve of the marginal stability, which looks sort of as a circle, approximately as a circle over radius 1. And how do we know that it is of the radius 1? Because it necessarily has to pass through the so-called Argyris-Douglas points, or the two-dimensional analogs of the Argyris-Douglas points. And those are of the radius 1 in the scales of the strong coupling scale. We have sort of dimensionless masses. When the masses are equal to minus 1, nth power of mass equals to minus 1, we have n such points, and they correspond to all vacua colliding with each other. Even if we had just two vacua collide each other, that would mean that a corresponding soliton, which interpolated between them, becomes massless, because its mass is zero, it doesn't interpolate between anything. So it corresponds to a massless monopole on the four-dimensional side. But on the two-dimensional side, we have only the monopole, and then again we don't see the massless quarks which are present in four dimensions at Arjuri's Douglas point. So there you have a monopole and a quark state become massless, and here we only see the monopoles. Well, still that is enough for us to claim that the curve has to have this sort of shape. So then there was a number of attempts to determine these curves, and that is necessary because they separate the strong coupling spectrum from the weak coupling spectrum, and by knowing them or all of them, you can see how one spectrum changes to the other. So it's well known that this theory in strong coupling spectrum just has a finite number of states, and in particular n states just here. So again, these are the solitons, which can be interpreted as dyons or dyonic kinks, and they're known to be sitting at the center of the circle. And the question is, what happens to them at weak coupling? So with the help of this superpotential built by Hori and Vafa, it is possible to argue that there are n states and find the shape of them. But then the question is, what do they really correspond to at weak coupling? So this is the previously known picture that we have quarks. Those are the massive quarks, monopoles, and dyons. So this is the notation and the bound states. So not, the notation is this, that the masses of quark, or the central charges of quarks, are given by the differences of the mass parameters. So they're all massive. This M is a sort of reminiscent of the monopole. It's a purely topological kink interpolating from vacuum number K to vacuum number I. And then D is a corresponding dyon, which is whose central charge is that of the monopole plus n units of the U1 charge, which is given by this, whose central charge part is given by these mass differences. So they can be seen by doing a quasi-classical quantization, and Nick Dory showed this, that this spectrum existed in 1998. But again, this is all at weak coupling. And we're going to see how this matches strong coupling. So we concentrate on CP2. It's the first non-trivial theory. Was it non-trivial? Because CP1 does have a CMS curve either, but it's sort of trivial. It has one tower. It has one tower of dyons, and all of these dyons decay on this curve of marginal stability, and it's already known what its shape is, and there is nothing pretty much new. So the next sort of non-trivial theory is CP2, and which corresponds to n equal to 3. So that's an odd n, which is important to important in this case. And first we build the curves. So the curves of marginal stability are just an analogs of a phase transition for supersymmetric theories. It is known that in supersymmetry there are no phase transitions, with some exceptions, because everything is supposed to be smooth unless artificially broken. This is really the, what the moduli space in terms of F0, what it looks like. So it has a number of branch cuts. So the solid lines correspond to the branch cuts of the logarithms. If you remember, the superpotential for the two-dimensional theory contained sigma log sigma terms, more precisely sigma minus m times log sigma minus m. And then there are all sorts of differences of sigma minus masses. And those logarithms produce branch cuts. So in this CP2 case, it's pretty easy to build all of them. And then there are additional branch cuts related to the fact that sigma is a square, a cubic root of a certain expression. If you remember the expression for sigma in the vacuum, they are the nth power roots. So although this is not perhaps very straightforward to see from this picture, but this complex plane of M0 has a Z3 symmetry. So you can split it into three equivalent parts. In particular, we have arranged the branch cuts of the cubic root in such a way that the symmetry is sort of more manifest. So if you sort of split the complex plane along these lines, then you have three equivalent sectors, even though it doesn't look like from, if you look at these differences. So we restrict ourselves to one domain, to one area. So this is a picture for a general N, and in the case of general N, we would restrict ourselves to the part of the complex plane between the this e to the I pi over N to the e to the minus I pi over N, which contains the real axis in the center. And so the other N sectors, or other two sectors, are equivalent to this. So if we build a spectrum in this part of the complex plane, we build everything. We also, as I mentioned before, limit ourselves to the sector, to one topological sector, which interpolates only between these two vacua. And that is, again, that is to say that all the other topological sectors will be completely equivalent. Now, in this case, when we have CP2, we don't have non-fundamental kinks because the vacua 0, 1, and 2 are precisely the same distance from each other. So you can't build kinks that are heavier than the other. So this is very useful, and we can study only one sector in this case. The masses of all the states will be the same, just the central charges will have different phases. So then there comes some maybe a little boring numerical analysis of the superpotentials, and of the curves of the marginal stability, which pop out. So the condition for the curves of the marginal stability is that the central charges of two particular states align. So if you build states from the vacuum values of this superpotential, and then you allow them to break into two other states, then their central charges have to be aligned on the complex plane. And that's a necessary condition. It doesn't mean that it is a sufficient condition, but still we can look for that. And then based on pretty much physical considerations, you can argue that they have to be there. So what happens with the weak coupling spectrum? So there are, again, quarks. There is one monopole, there is a tower of dions, And there's a tower of bound states. So those bound states were built by Dory again, Dory and Tong. What happens to them?
The core. Does this exhaust the recapping spectrum?
Yes.
So they deal with all the sort of Poiseuille factor. So this is the issue of Poiseuille factor calculation with capping.
But Corey-Waffle calculation is not in here. It's at small masses.
Why?
Oh, because that's where you can explicitly build the solitons. So you can only.
Why?
I don't know. It's a technical question. You need to build a sort of solitons which.
I mean, if you look at it. Low lines for the super potential, why wouldn't you get?
Well, in principle, you could. I mean, in principle, you could, but you are, I don't know, for me, it seems very difficult to just build this from, they would correspond to some, I guess, non-local states, which are very difficult to build. I don't know. What you're perhaps saying that the vacuum values of the Hori and Waffa picture match ours, and then you, in principle, could build the same spectrum. But I don't know the way to easily do that.
What do you mean? I mean, you just say you're supposed to follow the gradient flow lines from a particular point to another.
Or... Yes, but these states are allowed to decay, so and they do decay, so.
Sure, but the flow lines decay the same way the states do.
Yeah, perhaps that's a way to do that, but I don't know, we didn't do that.
I'm just trying to know, so how do you know that this exhausts this spectrum?
Well, because at weak coupling, you can find pretty much everything, right?
Not necessarily easy to find out about all the possible bound states of all the possible.
Yes, but well, I don't know. I would say that let's see if this is enough to describe the strong coupling spectrum. Then this should do it. So it is known that the quarks, the elementary states, do not survive as you pass into the strong coupling region and then decay. So the tower of dyons also decays pretty much all of it. So only one state survives. This is sort of a result of numerical analysis. And the tower of bound states also decays, and none of it survives. So the only things that are left as you pass from the weak coupling part from the external region into the vicinity of the origin are two states, this what we interpret as a monopole, and this what we interpret as a bound state of a monopole, and a quark. So there are only two states that survive.
Is this a...
But really we're... Yes. So what we do now is we match it with this spectrum. So this is known to, again, since this is CP2, it has n equal to 3, and we have three states. So and on the weak coupling side, we only have two left. So something has to happen with an extra state, and it does. So if you build it on a complex plane, they look equivalent, but in the different regions of the complex plane, they will have different masses. And in particular along the real axis, as we chose to have to consider the sector along the real axis, this will be the lightest state. It is really and usually the most reasonable to assume that the lightest state will be the monopole. That's because if you hang an extra U1 charge on it to make it a dyon, you will necessarily make it heavier. So then there is a problem, really, if this is that this state has to be the monopole because it's the lightest, but it doesn't have the zero sort of electric charge. This one does. So what happens to it is that this the lightest state actually decays, so it is not the monopole. I'll show the picture of the curves where everything decays.
The statements I'm doing refer to specific paths from Stokhausen to capping. It is just a straight path in there.
Pretty much, yes. But sort of you can look at it in the whole sector. So we're not really confined to. We don't really confine ourselves to a particular line. We show that in the whole sector, whichever line you pick, this is what will happen. So then this state is the next lightest, and is, I would argue, as I will argue, this is the monopole. So it doesn't have an electric charge in it. And this is the heavier state, which should be interpreted as a dyon. And then again, the dyon, as compared to the monopole, has an extra M1 minus M2 part in the central charge, which is why we interpret it as a dyon, as it has one unit of this charge. So, but its topological charge is hidden in here. And really, again, these masses that pop out here are the artifacts of our sort of inconvenient way to write this logarithm. You know, the logarithms are sort of always only defined on the complex plane from the face from 0 to 2 pi, whereas we need a bigger picture in general. You need to consider the whole, you know, number of branch complex planes. And then it turns out that if you write it in an appropriate way, and if you consider if you define logarithms in such a way that they're smooth as going across the branch cuts, then this mass can be absorbed into the superpotential in such a way that this superpotential for the central charge for the monopole becomes purely the difference between superpotential 1 and 0, or the superpotential at the vacuum number 1 and vacuum number 0, which tells you that this is precisely this has precisely the topological charge equal to 1, and that means that is a pure monopole. So then if you have different masses here, then they will already have some U1 part added on top of it. So these two states build their own tower, as we know, if you pass in the other direction, from the weak coupling, from the strong coupling to the weak coupling. This is an example picture of the complex plane. Now this is a plane of the mass to the nth power parameter, because again we chose the masses to sit on a circle, and we are only considering this domain. So we raise it to the nth power, we really cover the whole complex plane. This is much more convenient to consider. All of this Arcturus Douglas points, they merge with each other into one single point sitting at m equal to minus 1 here. So this is the point through which all of the curves pass. So This is why I was saying that this is a first non-trivial theory, because it has quite a number of curves of marginal stability. So starting from the external part, this blue curves are really parts of infinite spiral curves, which are winding out further and further. It is a little bit tricky to plot them all in only one plot, one graph. So they're kind of two mustaches which are unwinding in clockwise and anti-clockwise directions. And these are the curves on which the bound states of dions and quarks decay. There's the whole tower of these bound states, and for a corresponding n, there is one sort of one loop of the spiral which corresponds to a decay curve. So as you pass along the complex plane, clockwise direction, you gain by monodromy, you gain one unit of U1 charge. So then the curve of marginal stability for which corresponds to a decay for a quark and a dion with certain U1 charge will then correspond to a curve for the decay of the next dion with a higher U1 charge. So then one curve turns into the curve for the other state and the other, and as you unwind, you go further and further and allow for decay for higher and higher states. And they go all the way to the infinity, actually, which at first may seem puzzling, because you would not expect that there are any decays at weak coupling. But it turns out that this is still correct. The condition for the weak coupling needs to be very carefully considered, and then it turns out that as you approach those spirals, the conditions for the weak coupling actually are violated, and the decays are allowed. So there is no controversial. The fact that there are two parts to it is related to the fact that there are two branches. There are two branches of this state, so the upper curve corresponds to the decay with negative ends, and the lower with positive ends. So all of them are gone. So as you pass through all the spiral curves, you then approach the states where the dions decay. So one of the dions decay in these green curves, and the rest of the dions decay on the red curve, which is the so-called primary curve. So the primary curve is known for a long time, and it matches this. It pretty much matches the same for other CPM theories. So it's the easiest curve which can be found in this series, the easiest to find curve, and it corresponds to the decays of quarks and the dions. So the quarks and dions decay on this red curve, and it has a known shape and everything. Finally, there is the inner curve, which corresponds to the decay of this lightest states as you go from inside outside. So as you go from infinity to inside, there is the extra state is created, but as you go in the other direction, it decays. So again, remind that there was this lightest state which had to be gone, and it's gone precisely on this purple curve. And there was a confusion for some time where it was thought that all the states had to decay in the primary curve, and that was all to this picture, and there wasn't anything else.
It isn't what?
So the only states which are it decays into the only states which are inside. So there are three states that are, there are only two states in between this region, but there are three states in the center of the purple curve. So the quarks and dions and they all decay. So yeah, every state decays to whatever is accessible in the particular region. Well, just to mention that this purple curve is precisely the complement of this sort of pretzel shape primary curve. So it was, otherwise it wouldn't have a smooth shape, but this way by complementing it with this purple, you have a smooth picture. So as you can notice, there are compact and non-compact curves, as we find out. So three of them are compact, and then these two are non-compact because they're spirals and they go all the way to infinity.
So in principle, we can go around the spiral without crossing it to preserve all the powers almost until the very end.
In CP1, there are also lines that go to infinity, right? So it's not such a good time.
No, but...
And there's no spiral.
There is no spiral. No, you can't because... When you
yes,
well, first of all, spirals intersect each other, right? Well, the second thing then, as you pass across the complex plane, you gain one unit of the, or you lose one unit of the U1 charge, so the state becomes different. So there are two modes for decay, which correspond to the compact and non-compact curves. So there are these two modes, which correspond to a splitting of a bound state precisely into its constituents. So a dion and a quark split into correspondingly the dion and the quark. Then there's another mode for positive ends. It can happen that a dion and a quark decay actually into a different dion and a different quark. This is still allowed. So these are the two spiral curves that we had in this picture. But there are also the topological decays, and they correspond to different channels of decay, and they precisely are depicted there as the compact curves. So there is one bound state of a dion and a quark, which decays actually into monopole, and another dion. So these are the allowed states inside that strong coupling region, because you are allowed to have one monopole and one dion. They have different topological indices now, but otherwise they are okay. In the strong coupling region, you have two states, a monopole and a dion, and depending on their magnetic charge, they can have different indices here. And then there is this third lighter state, again, which decays as you pass from the strong coupling part into the weak coupling part, precisely from the center of this plane crossing the purple line. It also decays in the topological channel. That means that it decays into a dion and a monopole, which also exists there. And then the bars just designate that this is the anti-dions and anti-monopoles, and they are needed there for conservation of the quantum numbers. So a generalization now is that we know that two states of the strong coupling part of this n tuple turn into their own tower. So they build a tower which can be found through quasi-classical quantization. So this is the monopole tower, as you can call it. And then all extra states have to decay. So why do we think that? Again, there are n states at strong coupling, which are known again by Hoyer and Waffe, and so on and so forth. So two of them build a tower, but all the other n minus 2, even if it's 100 minus 2, they have to decay. Why do we think that? The other reason for that, of course, we didn't check this for all n's, is that for even n, there are no bound states. So Dory was able to determine that for when n is even, you can't build bound states for a particular configuration where the masses sit on a circle. So then it means even this 100 minus 2 states, they all have to be gone. And we do show this for n equal to 3. Then we can infer that most likely the decay for a general n as well. But of course, a more precise argument would need to consider also curve-like analysis and or anything similar to that or equivalent. Now we go to four dimensions and we conclude now that as there are known n sort of monopole or dyonic states, a strong coupling, again, two of them build a tower and turn into a regular monopole and a dyon, and dyons, dyonic states, but the rest of them have to be gone. And there are only certain allowed states which correspond to bound states of monopoles and quarks allowed when n is even. When n is odd. When n is even, you can't. But, however, this is only correct for our configuration of the mass parameters where masses are on the circle. When you step off this circle, you're not so restricted and you will most likely see those bound states. But what is not most likely is that the other strong coupling states will still have to decay. You won't see them. They will still have to decay. Yeah, I guess that's everything. Thanks.
No.
So this is this is much more difficult to do because here we deal with a complex plane, and it's very easy to build when you have n complex parameters. It's not so trivial, sort of, to even to see what can be done. Even on the mirror side, it's much more easier to work with a superpotential, which has this Zn symmetry, and you can easily build all the kinks, all n fundamental kinks corresponding to it. But when the masses are not, it becomes slightly less trivial. But maybe quasi-classical analysis should shed more light on what happens on what happens to the states.
Good. Thank you.